Okay, good afternoon. So I'll start by making a couple of comments on foreign trusts following the release of the Panama documents. It's my clear expectation that all New Zealanders will pay their lawful share of tax. As a result of the Panama Papers, IRD has set up a small group to review the papers to ensure New Zealanders are meeting their tax obligations and to support other countries if requests are made for further information. New Zealand has and continues to have a strong reputation when it comes to tax transparency and the exchange of information. The government takes the issue seriously, and we have called for a review of disclosure rules for foreign trusts by tax expert John Shewitt. One of our highest ranking tax officials attended an emergency meeting last month called by the OECD to discuss the issues raised by the Panama Papers. As I've been saying for some time now, if there's any need for change in this area, the government will consider it and if necessary take action. By way of summing up, it's important to note the existing rules already require foreign trusts to be registered and to keep detailed financial and other records. These can be requested by Inland Revenue and passed on to tax authorities in other countries. We also have a strong tax treaty and information exchange network. As of today, New Zealand has signed agreements with 109 countries, including many in Latin America. They include Brazil, Argentina, Mexico, Colombia, Chile, and El Salvador, just to name a few. We've seen some people, including opposition parties, claim that New Zealand is a tax haven. That is utterly incorrect. The OECD has four criteria for assessing whether a country has harmful tax practices, including making them a tax haven. New Zealand does not meet any of them. In fact, the OECD says we do not meet any of them. Just 3 years ago, it said New Zealand was compliant in tax transparency, the highest possible rating. Further, since Budget 2012, we have invested more than $205 million for the IRD to beef up its compliance work. We've introduced additional anti-money laundering laws and anti-corruption laws. We have entered into an automatic exchange of financial information with the United States FATCA. We plan to introduce legislation to enable the automatic exchange of financial information with up to 100 other countries. So there's been a lot going on in this area. If John Shewitt or the OECD review further improvements, we're certainly open to them. As you know, we are less than 3 weeks away from this year's budget. Budget 2016 will advance the government's work to support a strong growing economy so we can meet the needs of New Zealand families in the areas that really matter, like health and education. We'll include a wide range of initiatives that build on the good progress that's been made over the previous seven budgets. Last week we made several pre-budget announcements, including $124 million for PharmAct, $22 million to boost cyber security, and over $20 million to protect our native wildlife. Today, as you will have seen, we've announced the government will provide $41 million over the next 4 years to assist emergency housing and grants. This will provide 3,000 emergency housing places across the country per year, and a new emergency housing special needs grant to support individuals and families with the cost of emergency housing for up to 7 days. The government is focused on increasing the supply of social and affordable housing so people have a more permanent place to call home. We remain committed to growing a more diverse community housing sector and modernising housing New Zealand's properties to ensure that they meet modern needs. Parliament this week, we're looking to progress the taxation bill, the social security legislation rewrite bill, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement Bill. In terms of my own activities, I'm in Wellington tomorrow and on Wednesday as per usual. I'm in Auckland on Thursday and Rotorua on Friday for the Trends Conference. Over the weekend I'll be in Wanaka for a National Party Conference, the third of the four. And just to let you know, I'm a little bit short on time today, so I ideally want to get out of here about 4:30ish.
Is New Zealand a tax haven?
Definitely not. I could see you were paying attention to the comments I just read out.
On the issue of automatic, the automatic exchange over of financial information, does that need to apply to all countries across the border then you remove this problem?
Well, I think it would be any country that wants it. So it's important to understand that New Zealand is very high on the transparency index, very high in terms of its professional dealings in this area. Not every country is and wants that. But where countries want the information, we are giving it to them. It's important to understand that all the requests ever made of New Zealand would comply with all of them. But as of the work we are doing, which actually predates the Panama Papers, we think the automatic exchange that we have with Australia and the work that we've done with the United States will mean that over 100 countries will have automatic exchange.
You signal pretty clearly that you're open to a change whereby in future it has to be automatic.
Well, we're actually doing that anyway, even outside of the Panama Papers with up to 100. But we are quite happy to work with other countries to strengthen even further if that's possible, both the tax because of the mismatches around the world, but also on exchange
information. What should that automatic information be? Should it include who the settler is, the whole gamut?
Well, I think it would be enough information so that if an authority wanted to follow up for a particular reason, they could do that. And that's the most important thing. I mean, at the moment, we give that information to any jurisdiction of the 109 that ask us, and for every request we've had, we've complied with that.
The papers show that a lot of the overseas people are using it for business interests, not connected to inheritance or things that you've talked about in terms of opposition parties, and countries that are unstable and that sort of thing. What reason would someone in Mexico, for example, using a business deal to set up a trust here in New Zealand?
The first thing you appreciate is I haven't seen the papers, so it's very difficult to comment when I can't see the individual cases, nor am I a tax expert, so I can't comment on individual cases. But, for example, apparently there was one case I just heard someone talking about saying that the person was Mexican and had set up a trust because they were uncertain about Mexican inheritance law, tax law. Well,
there are plenty
of
examples that just refer to straight business deals.
I can't answer why that is. Well, New Zealand is a jurisdiction which is a good jurisdiction to do that, and for all the reasons that we know, that we do have exchange of information, that we do have transparency, we do meet the highest possible code. So there's all sorts of reasons why people might, but you have to go and ask those who establish those why they do that. I'm just not the expert in that area.
So the Foreign Trust Companies Association, representing the industry, apparently argued for a new corporate registry and much more information to get rid of the rogue of rapists. What do you think the government view on that?
Yeah, so my understanding of it was they were looking at a suggestion about a registry. The view I think of IRD at the time was that, yep, that's possible, but it would be a whole new way of doing things, would require a lot of work. It wasn't something they could do immediately, and there were bigger priorities. So I don't think they believe that that would have really made much difference, but again, there are all sorts of things you can look at.
Do you still have bigger priorities, though? If the industry itself wants to use it to clean up the industry, wouldn't it be a good idea?
Well, the first thing I think is, when people get a better chance to actually look at all the information, the question will be, what is actually required? I mean, at the moment, because I'm obviously in the blind because I don't have access to the papers, but the way it's been presented this morning is that, at least in media reports I've seen, is that they're not arguing that things aren't legitimate. They're arguing, they seem to be arguing in sort of different reasons. I don't know, we'd have to go and have a look at that.
Are you happy for New Zealand's reputation to be touted by the likes of Mossack, Fonseca very deliberately, and including in South America, that the reputation of New Zealand is a good reason for people in those countries to come and set up trusts?
Because
they won't be locked into too carefully because we're a reasonable country.
Okay, so it's a statement of fact that New Zealand has a good reputation, and so countries might want to, for instance, if you're in another jurisdiction, register a foreign trust here because we have a good reputation. But one of the reasons we have that good reputation is because we're compliant, because we exchange information, because we honour requests when they're asked of us. So in fact, if you're looking for secrecy, New Zealand's the wrong place to come because we're not going to provide that secrecy.
I don't think that is entirely
correct, actually.
Some of the times when we're talking, trust companies talk about New Zealand, they actually say disclosure setup that it's not that full is another good reason, and also look through companies, which I see in that tax bill.
Yep.
So what are you doing about look through companies?
Yeah, so again, there are changes that are happening. In fact, predating the Panama Papers, one of the cabinet committees this week, actually, funnily enough, is looking at the base minimisation rules and they are in relation, for instance, to look-through companies, because we've had concerns about that particular area, at least they've been raised with us, and IRD have been working on that issue to look at it. It is worth making one other last point. When our senior official went to Paris for the OECD conference, it was called as a result of the Panama Papers, New Zealand didn't get a single mention. So I accept that, you know, the opposition parties and some journalists and people like Nikki Hager wanting to invent some tag that New Zealand is a tax haven. It's not true, and it's not the way the international media see us. We have not been a major or dominant talking point when it's come to the Panama Papers.
So would
well,
you consider the Australian influential view
that overseas business use trusts in New Zealand to avoid tax? Well, we're not undermining our tax base. It isn't acceptable that they use it.
Okay, so one of the issues that you've got around the world is every country has a unique tax system, and that's one of the challenges, actually, is that there is no universal global tax code, and so everybody's is a bit different. And it is possible for people to potentially, through the mismatches of the different tax systems, if they want to be creative and work hard, to significantly reduce their tax liability, but in a lawful way. That is at least possible for what some multinationals are doing. And we don't like that, and we'd like to close that down. And that's why we're working with the OECD on the base minimization. But the problem we've got is we can't do that in isolation. We can't just magically say New Zealand can stop that. We need all of these other countries to work with us, and that's what we've been doing. We've been very active in that. In fact, again, a couple of our officials, this work's been going on for a period of time, have been chairing the committees on this sort of stuff. So we're the first that want to do that, not the least them being, because actually if it comes to multinationals, that will add to New Zealand's tax base. If it comes to foreign trusts, it might not, because those assets aren't in New Zealand, not taxable anyway, unlikely to change. But that is something we're very focused on.
Prime Minister, do you think in the growth this industry has grown in the last 10 years or so, do you think there are some rogue operators that come into the...
It's always possible, and when you get the release of the paper, you might get better information. So one thing I will say is if you go and have a look at people say there's been very substantial growth. Well, if you go all the way back a decade, about 900 foreign trusts were registered each year in New Zealand. Now the average is about 1,200. So there's a bit more.
And you think that there could be some rogue operators now?
Oh, could there be? Well, it's always possible. I just can't rule that out. But what I can tell you is that it is a very thorough process you have to go through. If you're a trust company that establishes one of these foreign trusts, which there are a number in New Zealand, you are subject to the anti-money laundering rules. That means, not the least of them, you have to actually know your client and know the source of funds. And there are very strong legal obligations on people that do that. Even I think, I don't exactly know how, but the officials say that on the Mossack Fraud and Secret stuff they've seen today, the stuff they've seen in the media, they were still registering those trusts with the correct IRD form, so with the correct, I think it's IR607, but it might be pretty wrong. So the point being that, that we have to make sure that people comply with the law. If we can get examples where they're not, then we'll take very strong action.
Are you going to shut the door on look-through companies? Because, again, in 2013 it was specifically named as a reason to come to New Zealand, and in fact New Zealand was named as the new Mossack Fonseca jurisdiction along with the league for those companies. Are you going to shut the door on them being able to be used?
Okay, so as I said to you, I can't really comment at the moment simply because the work hasn't, or the bill as it's proposed, hasn't gone to, well, one pilot, and one part's already in the House, so you need to ask Michael Woodhouse about that, because the most recent tax bill had some implications in that area, I think, from memory. But the second part of that, around base minimisation, is going off to our Cabinet Committee. So when I can look at that, I can give you much better information, or at least Michael Woodhouse's office can. But that's certainly one of the areas that's right in the sights of that, and we're doing work in that area, but that all predates the Panama Papers.
Are you satisfied that Inland Revenue is able to actually identify and have enough information? One thing that IRD told us this week, that 958 trusts came to their attention only because of a change of ownership of a provider.
Again, you'd have to ask them or Michael Woodhouse's office. I don't simply don't have all those details. I don't know.
Doesn't that reflect though that the Inland Revenue doesn't really have a handle on exactly who's behind or who's being registered with these trusts beyond the lawyers and the trust firm?
No, I don't think I would want to draw that assumption, but you need to get an answer from Michael Woodhouse.
Prime Minister, has Michael Woodhouse or anyone in the ministry had an update from John Shewan as to what is really kind of
I think Michael Woodhouse sat down with John Shewan and just caught up with him for a coffee last week. Certainly talking to the IRD officials in the weekend, they've already had some discussions with John Shewan. They felt very confident that the work he's doing, he's extremely knowledgeable. It's a very detailed and complex area, and they thought he was really getting to the nub of any sort of issues that would need to be debated. And the government is more than happy to make changes. We're already making them proactively, as you can see, and if there are better recommendations, we'll do that. But we do need to do it in a very considered way. I mean, yesterday, I think it was, you saw Andrew Little saying he's going to ban foreign trusts. Now he's walking away from that, saying he's not going to ban foreign trusts. I think in his mind he's going to might ban some ones he doesn't like, but not other ones. And this is the point, isn't it? Yeah, every country has quite a complicated tax structure. There are many layers to it. They evolve over time, and actually the important thing is that they work properly and they protect your base and, of course, your reputation. And I mean, at this point so far, I mean, again, that's not in public domain, the IRD will go through it all, but at this point, it doesn't seem to be that the media's identified a New Zealander that's not paying your rightful amount of tax. Now, if you've gone back to, say, prior to 1988, when the changes were made around taxing the sector, I suspect you would have got a lot of New Zealanders that might have turned up on that list who are maybe lawfully, but nevertheless, using a foreign trust for reasons to divert their own taxation here in New Zealand. So at that level, you have to say the tax system's working pretty well on the best information we have at the moment.
In that conversation with Michael Woodhouse, did John Shewan raise this issue, or have IRD raised this issue of rogue operators? Has this sort of been raised?
They didn't raise this issue with me, no. It was just generally the work they did.
Has the government been too slow to react since the Panama Papers broke? Did you drag your feet on this issue?
Well, I don't think so. You will always have your own assessment of my performance, and I accept that. But, it got raised on the Monday when this thing came out of nowhere. I didn't have any warning of that. I told you what I knew, which is what the official advice I had, which has been the consistent official advice the whole way through. New Zealand meets its obligations, it's highly regarded, and it's well thought of. As I said, I think even on the Monday, look, if there are issues, we'll look into those. In fact, you'll remember on the Tuesday, the Dominion Post headline was "Key Softening Stance" or something like that towards greater change. That was on the Tuesday. I mean, the greatest suspect, the people who had the Panama Papers had them for a year. I mean, I still don't even have access to them. So in that time, we've not only taken it seriously, we've said there are two issues. One is around disclosure, and we set up John Shewan's commission to look at that, and that'll be very thorough, showing John Shewan's work. And the second part of it has been around the tax treatment itself, and I believe we're doing the right thing working with our partners in the OECD. So I don't believe that we have been. The third part of that now, of course, is the small crack group of officials that will go through all of the information when they get access to it tomorrow and work with both our partners and make sure New Zealanders have paid the rightful amount of tax. So I think we've done everything that we can. I don't know what more I could do more rapidly than that, really, to be honest.
So is it time for the government to accelerate the second round of anti-money laundering reforms to include solicitors and real estate agents and lawyers, which would bring in some of these other foreign trust operators?
I think so. I think part two of the anti-money laundering legislation does need to be brought forward on the order paper. The focus was always, and I think rightfully so, on part one, because that was where the bulk of the work was done, but part two just needs to move forward.
So what sort of time frame? Because apparently it's been advised by the Ministry for some time. It's just
well, justice, I think, has always thought there are other priorities, and like anything, higher priorities, but we're encouraging justice to see it a slightly different way.
So how long ago did they actually argue that you should accelerate the
No, I think we've been arguing, I think justice has been arguing there are other priorities.
So what sort of time frame are we looking at now being for the second round?
As soon as we rapidly can, but I mean, it's within reason, we just need to work our way through it.
So, Prime Minister, just to be clear, if John Shewan recommends changes to the disclosure regime so that people with trust would have to actively disclose details about themselves, the government would do that?
Well, we're going to take John Shewan's recommendations very seriously. He comes up with some recommendations that we believe will enhance the disclosure regime of New Zealand. We will implement them. But I think it's really important to understand that we are seen as having best practice when it comes to disclosure. We do already proactively disclose, and even prior to the Panama Papers, we were looking to advance that to over 100 countries.
Because you know, with a you know, the term Bush lawyer comes to mind, but if that you had to describe the identity of the beneficiaries of these trusts, they could still take advantage of the tax-free status, but their names would be out there. That could close this, couldn't it? That could close these issues.
Look, I'd hate to sort of make comments about that because it's just very complicated in terms of the particular issues. It said at the moment, all of that information is there, and all of that information is made available, and if it goes through somebody who's controlled by the anti-money laundering rules, they have to know the client already, and they already have to know where the source of that fund, those funds came from.
So do you expect the issue to come up when Judith Collins goes to London this corruption week?
Yeah, so I was invited to go. I couldn't go, obviously, because it's around budget time, so it didn't quite work. Yeah, it'll be part of the overall thing. I mean, I think the UK has been listed as one of the countries where they are in the top 10 of tax havens, so we weren't, as you know. They were, along with the United States. We were working with them, just, and they're one of our important partners, so I suspect it will be talked about. And we are following all of the logical strands that you would expect us to. But I'm very confident that we have very good practice. It doesn't mean there can't be improvements, but there are, we follow them.
When do you think John Sherman will report back?
I honestly don't know. But I'd rather he get it right than do something, in a sort of knee-jerk kind of way. And one thing will be that when the IRD officials have an opportunity to see the database, they're very complicated, those databases, is my understanding. It'll take them some time to work their way through it, but they are at least really knowledgeable in these areas, and they'll be able to get to the bottom of the situation, see if there's some learnings from it.
Well, that's another issue. I'm just wondering, are you talking to Jerry Nathbara
about? I saw your comments this way. Look, we are looking for a new High Commissioner when the current one retires, which happens at the end of this year from memory, early 2017. We haven't made a decision yet, and it will be inappropriate for me to talk to you about who we are talking to.
Well, Murray McKelly did say you were quite a long way down that decision making process.
Yeah, and I think he said there are a range of potential people that could be not necessarily a career diplomat, but not necessarily a politician.
So would it be wrong to say that Jerry Nathbara is in the next person?
Well, I think the right thing to say would be that the government hasn't made a decision who the next High Commissioner will be.
Prime Minister, why do so many Mexicans and South Americans, Central Americans have foreign trusts here?
Well, firstly, you want to be careful that that's correct, because you need to understand all of that information in the context. You're seeing a slice of Mossack Fonseca. They are a slight, or you're seeing their information, but they're of course a slice of the foreign trust market that operates in New Zealand. Part of the first part of the question I can't tell you, but what I can tell you is that we have disclosure regimes and disclose all information to those relevant jurisdictions in Latin America, including Mexico, including Chile, including Brazil.
Have you seen the comments by Rear Admiral Mark Montgomery, who's one of the senior naval officers in the US Navy, asked if the US was considering sending a naval ship to the New Zealand Navy's 75th anniversary? The Rear Admiral said that that is under consideration or under review, so he's not ruling out sending a ship. Do you think they will send a ship down here in November?
Well, he's right. So what's happened is we're having the 75th anniversary. We've invited the Americans. We'd love them to come along. To do that, they need to make sure they could comply with the New Zealand law, because we're not changing that, and they're in the process of considering that. So they'll make that decision relatively soon, because they need to make the decision before, obviously, the event takes place, which is at the latter part of the year.
And do you expect them to comply with New Zealand law, which would mean they'd have to change their long-standing policy?
They have.
Confirm or deny.
Okay, so it's not quite as simple as that. I have to sign the a know if it's a waiver, but it's a declaration that you get, right? I have to sign the declaration that says I'm satisfied that complied with New Zealand law. So, for instance, if they send a Coast Guard ship, I would know they've complied with New Zealand law because of the public source statement they've made about the non-nuclear capability of both the Coast Guard and that we can carry weapons. So, the point is that they have to comply with the law. They can't comply with the law, I can't sign the declaration, and I can't sign the declaration if there's a chance it's incorrect, because I would be breaking the law.
So if the US Navy sends a Coast Guard ship, you will sign that waiver?
Or any ship that I am confident allows me to sign the declaration.
When the French or the British or the Chinese Navy send a warship, something a bit bigger than a coastal vessel, they often send destroyers or frigates.
Yeah. Now,
what steps do you take? Do you discuss it with them at all, or do you just make your own judgment based on the public available information?
Okay, so I get a declaration to sign, and I get a briefing note from MFAT. And MFAT, in the briefing note, go through in some detail about why they're confident I can sign the declaration. Exactly the process of how they put together the briefing note to advise me and give me the confidence to sign the declaration, I sort of refer you to MFAT and I'll tell you I'll have a process for doing that. It's quite a thorough process.
But doesn't this position mean that, you know, if the US finishes this review and sends a ship that is obviously not nuclear powered?
Yep.
That ship coming in here in November.
Oh, look, correct. I mean, we have invited them to send the ship. It needs to meet New Zealand law. As long as it does, we'll be welcome it to the anniversary.
And how does that differ from the Buchanan type situation where they send an old military rust bucket down essentially and David Longie said no?
Well, I guess you can choose to say no. You know the history better than I can, but that is the law. The law says you have to, the ship can't be nuclear armed or nuclear powered, must comply with New Zealand anti-nuclear legislation, and I have to sign a declaration which says I'm satisfied it meets New Zealand law.
Cases I cited before, the other countries that are nuclear.
They have nuclear capabilities.
You don't actually ever, as far as you know, ask them. Could you confirm or deny that this has got nuclear weapons?
I don't know the process by which they give me the recommendation, but the recommendation is thorough that they're confident of meets our law.
Do you think a ship will come in November?
That I don't know. I think that it's obviously a big call for them. We'd love them to come because it's a big celebration for us and a lot of our friends will be there. In fact, probably all of our friends will be there, so we'd like the Americans to be there. And I think it's a symbolic gesture. And realistically, our relationship with the United States is in the best shape it's been for a very, very long period of time. So I think there's a reasonable chance it will happen, but I can't guarantee it will happen.
Just kind of quickly going back to tax, why is Nicky Hager a conspiracy theorist?
Because I think he is.
Well, based on what?
You can draw your own conclusions.
So you said that there have been no international media that have criticised New Zealand as a tax haven. Do you count the Australian Financial Review, or what is
it? Yeah, okay, so the Aussie Financial Review, I've gone and done a bit of inquiries into that. I mean, they've made some commentary of their own. They have had a long-standing, journalists have had a long-standing view that Australia cops it sometimes and New Zealand doesn't. And actually that's because Australia is quite a different structure, but actually New Zealand is not a tax haven. It's not right, some of the criticism, and actually we're quite confident New Zealand meets its obligations. People are entitled to their own views. Journalists write all sorts of things all the time. Sometimes I like it and sometimes I don't. Doesn't mean I have to agree with it or believe it's correct.
Your former Revenue Minister, Peter Dunn, the Legal Minister for a number of years,
yep,
says this does kind of prove that New Zealand is a tax haven.
No, I don't think that's right. I had a look at his comments. What he said was he wasn't ever advised that there had been a substantial build-up in the number of foreign trusts, and that's because the numbers moved from about 900 on average to 1,200.
I mean, we asked him straight and easy, based on what I've seen today, yes.
Okay, well, in the end, he can make his own conclusions, but that, as you pointed out quite correctly, he was the Revenue Minister for a very long period of time, and I'll bet you if you go back and look at the advice he got was that New Zealand is extremely highly regarded, never considered to be a tax haven, undertaking best practice, and he was the Minister in 2013 when New Zealand received its rating at the highest possible level as compliant. I've got to go on about 1 minute, so if you've got one last question for me, then I'm out of here.
Prime Minister, you talk about people going and having control of the tax law, that's true, but New Zealand has more say over their foreign policy and more say over their policy than any other country. You talk about this being necessarily international presence.
Is this with the Cook Islands?
Yes.
Yep.
Would you be talking to Henry Clinton at all about reporting?
I haven't spoken to him, but it's just a statement of fact. I have no responsibility for the Cook Islands tax policy. That is decided by their parliament, and they make their own tax laws. What New Zealand has done for a very long period of time is provide them support so they can improve their tax system. And that includes, for instance, lending them tax officials. That's included, I think, helping them work on tax treaties and information sharing agreements. Certainly around the Pacific, I think possibly the Cooks, but around the Pacific we send judges to operate and help the judiciary. We've certainly, again, around the Pacific, not sure about the Cooks, but send police so they can help work on a range of issues. So New Zealand can help support our Pacific neighbours, including Niue and the Cooks and Samoa and the others, but I am not responsible for it. And for the whistleblower to somehow claim that I'm curiously quiet about the Cook Islands, I was also curiously quiet about Russia, Uganda and Argentina.
What about Niue? Have you had any briefings about Niue that pictures extensively in the papers?
I don't know because I haven't seen the papers, but the advice I had from IRD was that prior to 2006 there were potentially some issues in Niue, that the New Zealand government worked very hard with Niue to encourage them to do things a different way. And as of 31 December 2006, Niue completely changed the way they were doing things. But I think they will feature in the papers. That my understanding, I may be proved to be wrong, is that the infrastructure was so limited in Niue that prior to that point they might have used Mossack Fonseca actually as a registry for certain information that they held.
They are very close to New Zealand Governing and Breed Association. You know, we're effectively responsible for them in some ways. Is there any concern about Niue? Because it is more recent in papers
than down to the I haven't seen that. Obviously, if we can get a chance to have a look at it, we will have a look. I'm not responsible for it, but certainly we've been working with them. And I suspect there'll be other Pacific nations where there'll be concerns that will be raised as well. As I said, we take our responsibility seriously in trying to help our Pacific friends, but we can't force them to do things. They have their own authority and their own responsibility.
Have you personally had anything to do with Roger Thompson?
Look, I looked at his picture and he could have turned up to an event I'm at, but I don't think so.
Okay.